of our shows to your social media group and to someone you know who can benefit from today's subject. This is one powerful way that we can make a positive difference together. Now, before we get to our guest, I want you to know that I am grateful to all of you that take your precious time to listen to or watch this show, and especially those who are sending in questions, comments, reviews, and suggestions. I really appreciate it. And this is the time now, with us making the transition into Answers Network, we want and we need your questions. So if you haven't gotten your free copy of the Attitude Gratitude Journal yet, please go to our website at answersforthefamily.com, in which will also be linked with answers.network, and download a copy, giving it 21 days, and comment on whatever platform you listen to us on what focusing on gratitude has meant to you and your loved ones. Now, I have a quote, although not from the journal. Everything we do, every thought we ever had, is produced by the human brain. But exactly how it operates remains one of the biggest unsolved mysteries. And it seems the more we probe its secrets, the more surprises we find. And that is by Neil deGrasse Tyson. Now, our topic today, which you can probably guess now that I just spoke about the brain, is Heal Your Brain, Reclaim Your Life, which is also the title of our guest's new book. Her name is Susanna Stoica, PhD, and she is a healer, engineer, inventor, and speaker, and the founder of Healing Alternatives. She has presented many workshops, including a workshop on brain injury recovery at Harvard Medical School. Susanna has made numerous presentations about brain injury and the benefits of using alternative healing methods. Now, in addition to Heal Your Brain, Reclaim Your Life, and Healing with a Loving Heart, she also wrote the Amazon bestseller, Cooking After Brain Injury, Easy Cooking for Recovery, Volumes 1 through 5, which contains a special way of cooking that helps in brain injury recovery, as well as Five Mirrors, Five Blessings, which deals with processing emotional trauma. So, Susanna, welcome to Answers Network.
Thank you for having me, Alan. Looking forward to our chat.
Yes, yes. And now, before we get into the specifics, I mean, share with the audience the various types of brain injury that we as humans deal with and some of the statistics about brain injury that many people may not be aware of.
There are two big groups of brain injuries. One is when you actually have a hole in your skull, which is easily detected. And the other one, which is a little bit more difficult to detect, is when you have a concussion. Mm-hmm. When your brain is injured, but it's nothing visible from outside. And that is a bigger problem, because people don't know that you are injured, but you are not functioning properly.
Right.
And it can get to a very dangerous levels. And especially because our medical equipment cannot detect most of the brain injuries unless it is a major swelling or bleeding. It's not seen on the equipment. So people rely on some eye testing and cognitive testing. But what happens if you test it too soon? Sometimes you don't see it, and right. Sometimes the injury is so light that it's not detectable. And I have seen problems which appear many years later, even 25 years later, generated by these light brain injuries and serious problems like epileptic seizures. And no one knows; they think it just appeared out of the thin air. When actually what happened, the person either had an emotional shock or had a prolonged time of stress.
Well, see, that's a good point, because now you're talking about emotional or stress. So what is the biggest difference, and how do we find if somebody's in a car accident, or somebody is a professional boxer or a football player, we know that they're going to take a certain amount of hits to the head. But what about, as you're just saying, prolonged stress or a mental trauma that happened to someone maybe even as young as a child?
The mental trauma, it depends. You see, somebody, it's very interesting. The mind is so interesting. You can have a pair of siblings having exactly the same events happening to them, and mm-hmm. one would be traumatized, the other one wouldn't. Or the same exact type of trauma happened to two different people. One will become a high achiever because of it, and the other one will be permanently damaged. So it depends, the way we process trauma, it depends on our life experience, on our environment. Because if you have a supportive environment and the trauma is processed immediately, there are no problems later on. Mm-hmm. Also, if you have a trauma and you are already, your brain is already traumatized by a previous accident, then the imprint, it's like the brain has stops in it and it hooks the trauma. As opposed to a brain which is not traumatized, that wouldn't be that wouldn't react to the trauma.
So if you don't mind, please share your personal story with brain injury that drove you to focus on this area of expertise.
I was always interested in brain trauma. And after, it's a long story how I found out that I was a healer. But I found as a healer having very easy time dealing with brain injuries. So I was working with quite a few people with brain injuries, very helping them very easily. And then I had two traumatic brain injuries in the same day, slip and fall on ice from standing position all the way back, nothing, I didn't have anything on my head. Mm. So it seems that from what doctors told me, the second fall was the worst one because the first one tightened my muscles and pulled my head back. So when I fell the second time, my head was pulled back, so the trauma was even bigger.
Wow.
So I found myself, at that time, I was... a very high octane engineer, working long hours at my work, 10 to 12 hours a day and weekends, because I was in advanced technology, so I had to study all the time over the weekends. And several times a week after engineering hours, I was also working in a medical practice, helping doctors diagnose complicated illnesses and also helping with the healing talent that I had. And that fall, double fall, made me incapable of doing engineering and incapable of doing healing. So it was a terrible emotional impact, mm-hmm. because suddenly from being very much appreciated at your work and very inventive and being able to help others, here I was not being able to help myself, not being able to figure out how to say certain words. I speak several languages, as you can hear from my accent, and I couldn't remember words in any of the languages. So it was a terrible emotional impact. And at one point, I tried... of course, to force myself to be myself. Mm-hmm. And it didn't work. The more I was forcing myself, the more I was falling back cognitive point of view. So I got at one point where I was really desperate. And I decided that my family would be better without me. And then I said, wait a moment. I have a son, I can't do that. And then in the fog I was in, I realized that, wait a moment, I helped others heal from brain injuries. I should be able to use that knowledge on myself. And that started a very, very, very slow process of recovery using the knowledge I had. So that's the background.
Well, so share with those that may not be as familiar with it, you know, what energy healing is and how it works with illnesses associated with both physical trauma and emotional issues.
We are any living being, not only humans, have an energy field. This energy field is inside our body, physical body, as well as outside. And as you go further and further from the physical body, the density of this energy field is lower. This is what healers are working with. This was one of the shocking discoveries as a healer. This field is what governs the way we are, if we are healthy or not healthy. Is like the physical body is just the hardware of the computer, and this energy field is actually the software which controls how it works. And when we are stressed or we had a trauma, the energy field kind of contracts. And when we are relaxed and happy and we are doing stuff that we are enjoying, the energy field expands. Mm-hmm. Now, when the energy field tightens, the replication of the cells, the partition of the DNA into RNA and the part which dies off, doesn't happen properly. And in Biology of Belief, the author was talking about the fact that our proteins curve when we are under stress. So the DNA strand is actually a ladder of proteins. So what's happening when we are under prolonged stress, we are producing a lot of cells that are not healthy. But if the healer comes in and relaxes and balances the energy field, the cell replication happens properly, so we are healthy again. So the healer actually doesn't heal. The healer just balances the energy field, allowing our innate program of self-healing to work again.
So are we talking about the mitochondria in the cells?
I am talking about actually the ladder. The mitochondria is a part which decreases with age. Right. I'm talking about the DNA ladder.
Okay.
That tightens, and then when it has to, half of it usually dies off, and half of it, the information goes to the new cell. If it's tight, the partitioning is not proper. We always have cells that are not quite 100% healthy, but the body knows how to deal with it.
Well, so as a healer, are you also then, are you stimulating autophagy to clean out the dead or the sick cells so that young cells can reproduce?
As a healer, I allow the body to do it.
Gotcha.
So everybody's born with this capability of self-repair. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, if we cut our finger, we won't repair it. Right?
Exactly. Yeah.
No one does it. But if a healer is there, I had the situation when I had somebody who cut the tip of his finger, and right then and there I was able to be there, and I could see the tip of the finger growing back. But if it would have been a little bit of a time, it wouldn't have happened so fast. Why? Because when we are under stress or we have a major emotional shock, the body gets into an unhealthy balance. And the body has a self-regulation. So when an unhealthy state is for a long time, the body says, aha, now, so this is a new state. That's what I have to maintain. That's why the more the illness is in place, the longer it takes for a healer to help you, because you have to teach the body, what is a new healthy balance?
Susanna, we have a question that's coming in right now, and this one reads, what will happen to the DNA with the RNA COVID vaccine modifications?
No one knows.
No one knows.
That's a problem.
Okay. Yeah, everything's happening quickly, so I understand what you're saying. They're doing it without really knowing.
Yeah, seemingly this vaccine was known and shelved because they had other vaccines that were working. So this was taken off the shelf and tried out on COVID, and seemingly it worked. They don't know the long-term effect yet.
I think that's probably a whole nother show.
Yeah,
on that subject itself. Let's talk about some of the other things, because right now,
let me tell you one interesting thing.
Oh, please.
I don't know if you know, but I am working with COVID patients from the very beginning.
Oh no, I didn't.
Yeah, I worked with. I worked with a nurse actually who was on the ventilator, and she was off the ventilator in less than 24 hours. And most of the people who were sick, even in the very beginning when the COVID was really, really bad, it was something that I never saw as a healer in my nearly 40 years of work. It was mm-hmm. quite different. But these people, everybody was recovering with alternatives very fast. While if you went to the traditional route, people were very sick.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. But what I found is that doctors know at this point in time that people who had the COVID before about June in the U.S., they don't have immunity, which I don't think is right. I think they have a completely different immunity from what we are used to. Because I found that people who I saw having COVID and recovered didn't get it anymore. I can see them very resistant to COVID. It's very interesting. It's a different type of measurement for immunity for those people.
So I'm not sure that I completely understand. So what does that suggest for us for the future?
It means that what we know about immunity, the traditional immunity, has to be expanded. This immunity, because let me tell you what was the difference between the COVID, which is even now, mm-hmm. and what was a month ago, which wasn't a new one,
right?
And the original one. The original one was so different. I never saw such a thing. It was like when it went into a person's body, it was like a smoke. Usually, if I look at a virus, when somebody has a flu, for example, every person I am looking for a strain of the flu will have the virus or the impact of the virus visible in their field in the same place.
Mm-hmm.
And it's from alternative's point of view, they get treated the same way. This one was, so that one was very fixed. This one, the original flu virus, would go into the body, was like a smoke, and it will circulate in the body till it found the weakest point, and then it will become very physical, like the flu virus effect, but it would grow very big, much bigger than what I would see in the flu. So it was completely different.
So So to kind of mirror that back, so what you're saying is that, you know, the regular flu, if you would get it, it would go in and you would have certain symptoms, but it would kind of do the same thing. You're saying that this one was actually seeking out weaknesses in the body, like it was looking for like chink in the armor to handle it. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it was very strange because I could see it moving inside the energy field.
Oh.
Yeah, it was really strange. I never saw such a thing before.
Wow. I'm a firm believer in a variety of different and alternative methods. And it has been a concern of mine that the concept of telling everybody, you know, stay inside, don't exercise, you know, don't, you know, all of these things. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, but those are all the things that help build our immune system to be strong enough to fight it. So let's not do things that are going to work against us. Does that make sense?
Actually, the things that people should do right now, deep breathing, oxygenate your field, walk to enable the cells to work properly, because that's how all the information is transmitted in your body, with through electrical effects, which are enabled by water. Keep in touch with other people. Use Facebook, use Zoom, use all the tools that we have today, and keep in touch with people. And do something good for somebody else, because that gives you a positive feedback, which really helps in these times. And those none of those cost any money.
Right. Well, that could be why we're not being told to do all of those things, because nobody has monetized them yet.
Yes.
So for everybody listening, we're going to take a break. But, you know, we're talking about healing your brain. We're talking about reclaiming your life. And even if it has to do with COVID, or if it has to do with a physical trauma you've had, or a mental trauma, there is so much good information here. So stay with us. We're going to be back. You're listening to Answers Network. We may not have the commercial. I don't hear it. So, well, it looks like we don't have one coming on. So let's go to, we have a question that has come in. And again, I love it when people take the time to send in questions for our guests. This one reads, our son suffered a brain injury while playing football in his junior year of high school. You know, our boy became increasingly anxious and depressed. We consulted a neurologist that put him on medications that resulted in our son being despondent and hardly able to function. I convinced my husband to consider an alternative medicine approach, and we found a wonderful naturopathic physician who did a battery of blood tests and recommended a nutritional and supplement plan that the entire family could participate in. Within a few weeks, our son and his siblings and ourselves all noticed many positive changes. We are now passionate about continuing to learn and find resources. And when I saw your book, I knew it was going to be a good one for us to add to our collection. And this is from Francine in Oregon.
Yes, it's very important. One of the reasons I wrote the book, Cooking After Brain Injury, is because the brain needs to be taken care of through proper nutrition, too. I have to add, though, that it would be a good idea to find somebody, a healer, to also work with the brain to take out the trauma pattern from the brain. Because that later on in life, or if he does gets injured again, this young fellow can have problems. I have seen somebody 25 years after the accident having problems out of the blue.
Now we have listeners all over the world, of which I'm very thankful for. Is there an association of healers that people join either in the United States, or is there one that's international? That if someone is listening to you, and or the person that just sent in, Francine, says, "Oh yeah, that's a great idea. I want to add a healer." Is there an association or something to where they can find someone if they want somebody close to them? What's the best thing for them to do?
Unfortunately, not every, as I found out from my own experience, not every healer knows how to work with the brain.
Okay.
There are international organization, Therapeutic Touch and Healing Touch. Those are two organizations of where there are nurses and doctors and lay people who are participating. They have to work with somebody who has experience in working with brain injury. I work with people all over the world, long distance.
Explain how you do it long distance. In other words, are you, is it something, how are you reaching their energy from that distance?
Through their picture. I agree with them. For example, I had somebody in Romania, a lady I never met, and she was taken to the hospital, and she was given an MRI.
Mm-hmm.
And in the meantime, her family was very concerned, contacted me, gave me her picture, and I started working on her. I told them that the person had a brain bleed and that I was able to stop it. And next morning, when they got the MRI result from the previous night, they confirmed that they found the bleeding, and they repeated the MRI and the bleeding was stopped. So I had the confirmation.
So for those of us that are, you know, kind of look at things both sides, explain to those that might be very scientific how you spotted a brain bleed by looking at a picture of someone from a distance. I would imagine that, you know, they're sending it to you over their phone or over the computer or something.
Yeah, I can receive through the phone if it's an iPhone. Mm-hmm. Usually the Android sends a picture in pieces. So they have to email it. But the picture is only a vehicle to connect to the person. After that, I close my eyes and I literally can see inside the person's body. So I could see the bleeding and I could see when it stopped.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah, I am very grateful for it.
Yeah, I can imagine. Can we talk a little bit about some of the diseases? And this is where I was starting to go earlier. We now have autism. We now have Alzheimer's. We have dementia. We have all of these things that are affecting people's brains. I guess I have multiple questions on that. One is, what do you think is causing us to have so much more of this? And secondly, what can people do to either, can it be stopped, or, and even better, can it be reversed?
Let me start with Alzheimer's and dementia.
Okay.
I worked with quite a few people, and I found in many cases that the problems, the mental problems, were caused by two things. One, the person was in a retirement home and separated from the family, mm-hmm. and they were just waiting to die. And that creates a very bad environment for the brain. And there are known in literature experiments when people were taken out of the retirement home by a younger member of the family and the person recovered.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So our society's way of dealing with old age, when people are discarded in retirement homes, it's a very bad practice. The traditional way of several generations living close by, if not in the same house, was a much better thing. So that's one of the reasons we are seeing more of the dementia, Alzheimer's.
Yeah, I sort of look at it as like dying from loneliness.
It's more than that. It's what's happening as we, the other, let me tell you the other reason, because they are connected. The other reason is that people don't, as they get older, they don't drink enough water. They don't move enough, and they don't have right nutrition. So they kind of say, I can eat anything at my age, which is not right. Because what happens, first of all, I have seen people, I can see inside the brain, and I see saw the brain literally dried up from lack of water.
Mm.
And when that happens, the signaling of neuron to neuron cannot happen properly. So drinking enough water and not, it's very important how you drink it. You have to drink a quarter of a cup to half a cup at a time, because otherwise the body just eliminates it. So people should eat. The other thing, the nutrition, what's happening, our body slows down as we age.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't eat the roughage, the salads, at least one big, nice, big salad a day, the food doesn't get eliminated. It stays in our body and produces toxicity. Now, when the gut is toxic, our mind doesn't work properly.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very, very important for people. People are separated. They don't eat. They are toxic because they don't eat properly. They don't drink water. All those contribute to this huge amount of people with mental problems in old age. And also, you know, in traditional societies, older people were appreciated for their experience, not in our society.
Okay. Well, when you talk about it in regards to the, like, the lack of hydration and the brain drying up, so is it drying up to the point that the blood that would normally get to that part of the brain is not getting there because there's not enough nutrition or not enough hydration for the blood to get to those finest little parts in the brain?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. In the extremes, that's what happens.
Okay. And how about the blood pressure itself? You know, is that where the exercise comes in, so that the heart is pumping enough that the pressure is putting the blood to all of those remote little places in the brain?
Yes. Yes. Plus you need oxygenation.
Okay. Which also comes from the exercise. And the breathing.
Yeah. If you don't move, how are you going to pump to the tiniest arteries?
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
So you can't think straight.
Yeah. And I feel like there's a lot of that going around these days.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So let's talk a little bit about stress, because I know that, you know, COVID has added a layer of stress to pretty much everybody. How is that affecting how is that affecting our brains, both immediately, and how do you think it's going to affect us in the future? What are we going to be looking at, 10 years down the road now in regards to this generation that is having to deal with this right now?
First of all, people should be more aware. I think that they should talk more about it, about the depression that is setting in. Some people I know are watching news constantly, mm-hmm. the bad news. And if you look at the politics, if you look at the COVID statistics, it's always negative stuff. Instead of watching all the time, repeatedly, the same thing again and again, which generates stress, which generates depression, people should watch funny movies, go out, take a walk, call up somebody who is a positive person, interact with people. Very important. Don't separate yourself. It's asking for trouble.
Right. And I was going to say, and like we were talking about earlier, you know, instead of watching the news, watch a Hallmark movie.
Exactly.
It's a happy ending.
Yeah. I would, if our TV people will be aware, they should look for positive examples of people who did something, you know. That should be 90% of the news.
Right. Well, I think they are aware. I just don't know that they care as much for what they're doing to people versus how much money they can make from it. And unfortunately, you know, one of the old lines from many, many years ago was, if it bleeds, it leads, you know, so that, you know, no matter how that there's something, in fact, you may know this, but something in the brain, and apparently it's somewhere between 7 and 10 times stronger in regards to getting our attention if it's negative than positive. Is that about right?
Yeah, it's people react much. It's a flight or fright mechanism comes in.
Yeah,
and immediately we have the attention for the negative stuff. So people who want to advertise will pay for negative information.
Right.
So it's up to us to choose the right information that we are watching.
Exactly.
You know?
And that's part of the reason, like when I started this show, was to put out things, to put people on that were going to bring information out there that's going to make your life better, you know, not watching something that's going to make your life worse. So, you know, I want to tell everybody, you know, if you get a book like Susanna's, or if you get, you know, and I know that, you know, you're on other podcasts and things like that, but there's so many people out there that are really promoting positive things, but because, you know, they're not monetizing it in the same way that big media is, you know, people don't always know that it's out there, which is why I ask everybody for every show, you know, if you like this and if you think it's helping, spread the word, get it out to more people. If we can get more people recognizing the value of positive information, we're going to have to turn it around ourselves, because they're not going to change the way in which they try to take over our eyes and our ears unless they can't make money at it. So we have to make the first step.
We have to be the agents of helping others. For example, one of the things that I am doing, I receive from all over the world jokes. Mm-hmm. And I choose the best ones to forward them to groups that don't provide jokes for me.
Okay.
So it's very easy.
Well, now you just set yourself up, because now you've got to tell us a really good joke.
Okay, I have one. I have one. An optimist and a pessimist start discussing. And the pessimist says, "Oh my God, it's so bad with the COVID and all this election crap and people losing jobs and so many people are dying. I don't think it can be any worse." And the optimist says, "Yes, it can."
Well,
yes, yeah. It can.
Yeah, as you were saying that, and I was thinking, wow, this is really true, you know, as far as, you know, the way in which these conversations tend to go. And we've only got a couple more minutes, but I mean, what would you recommend to people, you know, that feel that they're suffering from brain trauma right now?
It's very important to find somebody who works with brain trauma, who has a track record of working with brain trauma, and be checked out to make sure that there is no trauma left in the energy field. and have it removed.
All right. And I have another quick question that came in from a listener. And this one says, I have a question about how someone could develop dementia after having a brain injury. My older sister is only 60, who is only 62, slipped, fell, and hit her head a couple of years ago. In only a few months, she was showing signs of short-term memory loss. The doctors have now diagnosed her with dementia. She lives alone in her home and gets very upset when we even mention the subject of moving to a senior living complex or somewhere where she's going to be with other people to interact with. Do you think that she is being misdiagnosed? And would your book provide any help on her condition? This is from Henry in California.
I understand her very well. People who have brain injury lose the self, and they don't want to lose their independence. I know very well. Mm-hmm. For years, I couldn't sort through stuff, and I had a basement full of stuff because I couldn't figure out what was important and what was not. So I wouldn't throw out anything. So the fact that she didn't want to go to a place where she would interact with other people, it's also because it's very difficult to have many people around when you have a brain injury. Right. So what I think she actually has is a follow-up to the brain injury. And I strongly recommend as soon as possible, find somebody to check her out.
Yeah. And to add to that, and I think when you say find somebody to check her out, more than just, you know, whatever doctor your HMO sends you to, but
no, find it's a local, healer.
Find a local healer. Or a functional medicine doctor or someone who's going to look a little deeper than just hooking her up to a machine and then throwing some pills at her.
Probably they won't see anything on a machine. They need a healer who can see in the energy field and is able to take out the trauma.
Well, Susanna, this has been wonderful. I really wish we had more time. I hope that you'll come back. I would love to have you on again. In fact, and maybe that time we'll talk a little bit about Transylvania.
Okay. You have a deal.
All right. Well, Susanna, thank you so much. And again, what is there a best place for people? Now, I know the books you can get at Amazon. I looked them up myself, and you guys can go to Amazon and get any of her books. And again, if you want to just look her up, the last name is spelled Stoica. So it's Susanna Stoic, but it is spelled O-I. So if you're going to Google her to find her, but what would be the best website to go to get more information?
Either mylastname.com or okay. The same website you can reach healingbraininjury.com.
Okay. So again, that's healingbraininjuries.com. If you're driving injury, out there, don't try to write this down. What's that?
Oh, it's injury, not injuries.
Injury. Not plural. Yeah,
healingbraininjury.com.
Yes, healingbraininjury.com. And if you're driving out there, don't try to write this down. We'll make sure we have all of this on our website on theanswers.network and answersforthefamily.com. Susanna, again, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. And for everybody out there, please tune in next Monday when we're going to be joined by Malcolm Stern, author of Slay Your Dragons with Compassion, 10 Ways to Thrive in an Instable World. And if we've ever had an instable world, this is the time. And in this interview, Dr. Stearns will share stories of how ordinary people with extraordinary challenges that they faced and how they succeeded against overwhelming odds. And for everybody out there, please visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com and answers.network, or subscribe to our show through iTunes, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, YouTube, Spreaker, Instagram, SoundCloud, and I feel like I'm missing something. If you like what you hear, please leave a review. It will help us reach more people, and I want you to know we greatly appreciate it. Next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember to stop by our page. Check out some of the latest posts. If you like them, please spread the word. And for everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers Network.